providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we're shifting our focus almost exclusively here to the precious metal sector, but we're also going to touch on copper and even more so drive down into the underlying equities. We are chatting with Dave Erfle, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Now, Dave, just a quick comment regarding the precious metals prices, gold and silver. It's been interesting in the sense that silver especially has been much more volatile, but just over this last 3-month rally that we have had, the corrections have been quite shallow and bought back almost immediately. This week, it was another very interesting week for silver as it dropped just below that 30 level after 3 days almost in a row of some pretty substantial sell-off. But then it's bought back very quickly. We're recording this on Thursday, and Thursday's looking like it's going to be a very good day for silver, and silver's back above $31. So, Dave, your takeaway from, again, the corrections in gold and silver being shallow and bought back very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical bull market, precious metals bull market action, right? I mean, we're only 8 weeks removed from a major breakout in the gold price above multi-year resistance at 2,000, 2,100. I mean, 2,000 was basically 13-year resistance and a major breakout above there. We had a monthly quarterly close above 2,100 in March, and then we had a scalding breakout move, and the gold price is just correcting in time and price here. It's going, moving sideways and doing what it does in a bull market. It came back down and tested. It's sharply rising now, a 50-day moving average, and it's consolidating here below 2,400. We had two tests of 2450 and it got a little overheated and now it's correcting that move. And that's typical bull market action. And silver broke out above 30 on a monthly closing basis last week. And then as soon as it did, we had a sharp reversal, came back down and tested that 30 level this week and went a little below it, like you said, and it's going right back up again. And silver remains in a strong uptrend. So this is typical bull market action.
Yeah, Dave, it's been exciting to see the pullbacks being more shallow and that the buying has come back in silver. And gold has really just held its own. It hasn't been falling out of bed or breaking out. It's just been consolidating the big move it had. I had shared with you just off mic before we started recording that I ran into a couple of buddies and they were asking how gold and silver were doing. I reported back that gold's in the 2,300 to 2,400 range and that silver finally broke 30. And their response was, well, boy, I bet the mining stocks are just tearing higher then. I bet you guys are making buku amounts of money. And that's not what we're seeing. I had to tell them that, hey, unfortunately, the volume's still not there. And while they've gotten off their bottoms, we're just not seeing a ton of love in the gold and silver mining stocks. What would you say to people looking at this dichotomy between the price of the metals and the mining stocks still dragging butt here, even though the prices are very robust?
Yeah, it's an opportunity. We are starting to see bifurcation in a lot of the better juniors and especially the majors and royalty companies. But if you take a look at the volume, it's still a little, just a little more than half of what the volume was pre-COVID in GDX and GDXJ. So there's just still not a lot of interest in gold stocks, and that also in the West, in Europe and the US in gold ETFs. The gold ETF buying has been pretty robust in Asia, especially in China. But here you're just continuing to see some outflows. But a lot of that is going into physical gold. Costco can't keep gold on the shelves, physical gold on the shelves, and the premiums are high, especially in China. The premiums are really high. I know the premiums got up to 15% in silver in Shanghai. It's interesting that the gold stocks still are lagging, but I think that's about to change. We got about a little less than a month now in the quarter, and at the end of July, these mining companies are be coming out with Q2 results. And in Q1, we already had some blowout quarters from number one and number two miners, Newmont and Agnico, and their share prices followed suit with nice moves higher. But the gold price was averaging a little under $2,100 an ounce in Q1. And it looks like to me at the end of the quarter here in 3 weeks that the gold price is going to average over $2,300. And that's over $300, probably going to be almost $300 more. So these margins are going to be fantastic. These cash flows are going to be fantastic for these miners.
So, Dave, again, that helps the miners, right? And the miners, large, they have rebounded. The mid-tiers have really been the standout. And as you said, large royalty companies have. But that money hasn't gone down to the juniors. So are we depending on the majors and on the mid-tiers to them filter that money down? Or will investors finally trickle down there?
Yeah, I believe they will. But it's still a stock picker's market. We have seen several juniors bifurcate and start to move higher. Some of them have doubled and tripled off their lows. But as a sector, yes, a lot of the juniors are still lagging and the volume just isn't there. They're pretty much really still under-owned, unloved, and even hated by the general public. And like Chad referenced, they're not even looking at them. They're still in AI and crypto. So that's where the opportunity lies. You just have to have a lot of patience, and it gives you the opportunity to buy the best of the best and hold them. I recently added some money to my investment capital to my portfolio for the first time in quite a long time. I've always stuck to the same amount of investment capital since way back in 2005, when I did something crazy and sold my house and put all the money into juniors. And I hadn't added investment capital up until this week. And I just looked at some of these juniors that I own and on my watch list and said to myself, hey, this is the time to get into one more and add to a couple existing positions, because it sure looks to me like the gold price is getting ready to move on to its next target. It's consolidating here below between 2450 and 2300. And I think it's just getting ready to go higher. I mean, we're seeing stagflationary, recessionary data coming out of the U.S. The Q1 GDP is 1.3% and inflation is still 3.5%. That's stagflation. And now we've got weak jobs numbers coming in this week. And it's culminating in the NFP that's going to be in the non-farm payrolls report in the U.S. It's going to be announced tomorrow. And if that's a bad number, we had a bad ADP number, we had jobless claims rise already this week. So if we have a bad NFP number, that I think that could get the gold price above 2,400. And we've also had central banks now lowering interest rates. Canada this week became the first G7 central bank to lower interest rates. And that was followed today by the ECB cutting interest rates for the first time. And that puts pressure on the Fed to do the same thing. And they're eventually going to probably have to lower rates while the inflation rate's nowhere near their fantasy 2% target. And once the market realizes, that's when gold and silver really go ballistic.
Well, Dave, I think the fact that you added capital to your trading account to take more positions or add to existing positions is very significant, especially if you haven't done that since back in 2005. I mean, that is a pretty big statement from you. You don't have to name the companies because those are for your subscribers, but just in general, what are the attributes of the companies you're adding to? What are the kind of companies they are, the stage, and then also what attributes do those companies have that you think give them extra torque?
Well, the new position is an optionality play. They have a lot of gold in the ground and it's trading at less than $10 an ounce. It's in a safe jurisdiction. They have strategic partners with access to capital. They're cashed up well into next year. And they've got a credible timeline for their two projects, one being fully permitted and shovel ready by mid to late 2026, and the other one being fully permitted and shovel ready by mid to late 2027. And they've also got a U.S. AMEX listing and a tight share structure. So all that adds up to, once the retail public finally starts to sniff around these gold stocks, these juniors, getting into a lot of them have retirement accounts or they have Robinhood accounts, and they're not able to get into OTC listed companies via those platforms. So a junior with a big board listing has a big advantage.
Dave, what about other optionality plays? These companies that have been around for a while, they have ounces in the ground, but they need higher prices. If you see higher prices on the horizon, are these some of the low-hanging fruit because they don't need to spend the money and do the work to build up those ounces?
Absolutely. They just need to do the work to attract a partner, a strategic partner, if they haven't attracted one. And they've also got to show that clear timeline to being shovel ready. Because a lot of these North American juniors, I mean, these juniors that have these multi-million ounce high margin projects with a gold price above $2,500, their timelines to being shovel ready are pretty far out there, because it takes so long to get a project fully permitted in a lot of these North American jurisdictions.
Well, Dave, I know that in addition to some of the advanced explorers and developers that have ounces in the ground and that optionality, you also have some growth-oriented producers, gold and silver producers, that are junior producers. Maybe speak to the optionality there, because if we do see rising metals prices, you know, that has a big effect on their margins, but they also are still exploring. So maybe speak to that angle of your investment strategy.
Yes, that's what I like about these small cap growth oriented producers, because they're working on growth through the drill bit. They're proving up ounces and adding more ounces. And they're also not getting the value for the ounces they already have in the ground. And they have a low debt load or no debt and lots of cash to do this. That's even better.
Dave, what about exploration plays then? We have to ask you, it's gotten more expensive to explore, and we keep on hearing just how hard it is to find new discoveries. The sector hasn't had a major discovery here that has really driven the market and driven interest and driven a takeover since, I guess we would have to go back. Well, Snowline. Snowline's a recent one that has gotten some attention, but that hasn't been taken out. So what about discovery plays? What about exploration plays? Anything entice you there?
Not really. I've ignored them for the past 2 years. Sure, I missed something like a Snowline and a newfound gold, but those are only two examples I could see that produced outsized multi-bagger gains. And I think also moves like that in just two stocks can be detrimental to the sector when the rest of the early stage exploration sector is not participating, because investors see that and they see and they say, okay, well, I'm going to start getting into these early exploration plays because look what I can achieve. I can get these multi-bagger gains in a short amount of time. But when they don't materialize, they end up losing much more money than they expected to make after a major discovery. Because there's still been several of these companies that have had bonanza grade discoveries, major discoveries, and they didn't move nearly as much or even sold off because the market took a look at their cash and said that, hey, I'm not going to invest in this company now. They've only got 4, 5, 6 months of cash left. I'm going to wait till they raise money and get a free warrant. And on top of that, if I'm an underwriter and I know they're working up, they're getting ready to announce a financing, I'm going to short the stock. So all these games are still being played on Bay Street and House Street because this sector is basically being traded by sector professionals, and the retail market isn't coming in, basically meaning that you're not having uneducated and newbie money coming in to the sector when they see a strong drill result in a company and moving the share price up. So what's happening is the street is controlling the price on a lot of these early stage companies, even when they have good results, and investors get frustrated. They sell the stock continues to go lower, while the gold price is going higher, which makes it even more frustrating. So I really don't see the need to take a chance on these higher risk early stage companies just yet, when there's so many of these other companies that have proved up these multi-million ounces in safe jurisdictions inside of high margin projects that are trading at less than $40 an ounce in the ground. I mean, if you take a look at what happened during the last bull market that ended in 2011, several of these companies were being taken out at $1,000 an ounce in the ground and higher. And yet we've got a lot of these companies that the economics of their project look so much better, yet the stocks are trading at less than $40 an ounce in the ground just after the gold prices has broken out and moved into a major bull market and hasn't gotten on the radar of the generalist investor yet. But eventually it will. If the gold price continues to go higher, it can't be ignored forever.
Yeah, Dave, you raised some interesting points, and I think it brings up an interesting topic I'd like to get you to weigh in on, and that is that I've been in the space about 15 years. When I look at it, I think a lot of people are playing the sector, gold and silver stocks, thinking they're investing in gold and silver, but they're in exploration plays that are discovery plays that don't have any gold or silver yet, and they're swinging for the fences trying to get those 10-bagger returns. All we hear about is those 10-baggers, and sometimes the company provides even more than that. But the truth is, the honest truth is that there's 1,000 explorers and 90% of them will never come anywhere close to that. So what that means is they're not going to swing for the fences and get that 10-bagger every time. They're going to strike out most of the time. You kind of take a different approach in your portfolio. You're trying to get 3X to 4X to 5X moved in companies that are a little more established. Maybe speak to maybe a little more sane approach to investing and still plenty of upside, but not always trying to get the grand slam, just trying to get some base hits and honest gains.
Yeah, I mean, you don't go for the grand slams till the retail market comes back into the sector. I mean, they left in 2013 and have not returned. That's a long time to be out of this sector. And it's the volumes that are telling you this. The volume has dried up in a lot of these juniors and it just isn't there. And that's telling you that the sector continues to be ignored by the generalist investor. So absolutely, I'm basically putting my major hat on now. I have been for the past few years. If I'm a major mining company, I have to start replacing my ounces. You know, I've shored up my balance sheet. I've got a healthy balance sheet. I'm paying dividends. I'm even buying back some shares because my share price is a little low. Or maybe I'm a major that is bifurcated from the market and my share price is really high. And now I need to concentrate on adding more ounces. So I'm going to do, I'd like to do so with my high share price and take something out with my shares. So I'm saying to myself, okay, if I'm a major, I'm looking for companies that I think are strong takeover targets in the near to intermediate term. And they're still trading at these rock bottom prices in relation to the price of gold. But they have these attributes, like I said, of basically having a strategic partner and preferably strategic partners, access to capital, that they have enough cash for the next year or so, or they're searching for either a strategic partner or they're searching for an attractive finance package. And they've got all these attributes in their project where they're in a safe jurisdiction. And it looks like they've got this credible timeline to being shovel ready, to being in production within the next 12 to 24 months. Those are the companies that look attractive to me right now, because the risk is pretty much taken out of these stocks right now at the valuations they're trading at in a gold bull market. But the risk is still there if you're going for an early stage company that is looking for something, or maybe they haven't reached the PEA stage yet. They've got a lot of shares out and they don't have the treasury to last them for the next 12 months. They're going to be needing to raise money and the street knows this. Then you have to deal with other market forces. Now, with a lot of these early stage companies, and like you said, 85-90% of them are pretty much worthless. So there's really no need to take that higher risk in going for these early stage companies right now until we get into a bull market in the mining shares as well as gold and silver.
Yeah, that's the key thing, right? A lot of these stocks haven't moved. So why go down to the smallest stocks right now? Because, well, you can still get those gains in the more established stocks and the stocks that have already done their work. Fair enough. That makes total sense. And again, it just ties into that bigger theme that these stocks are broadly still kind of lagging these breakouts in the underlying metals. What about copper? Is it the same story that you're seeing in copper, where copper went over $5? It did quickly correct to back under $5, but it's sitting around $4.70. That's a generally strong price historically, maybe not inflation adjusted, but historically it is a strong price. Copper majors have done well. The juniors, even the mid-tiers, they haven't done that great. So same story for the copper stocks as the precious metal stocks.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, $5 is the resistance, like 2,100 was the major resistance for gold. It ran up there. We had a short squeeze. The short squeeze has come off. And I'm seeing stories now that China's got these major stockpiles. They've got a lot of copper piled up. And it looks like the U.S. is heading into recession. But as long as the copper price stays above $4, I think that bodes well for the copper majors and mid-tiers. But yeah, like you said, I mean, we still haven't seen that come down to these copper juniors yet. I mean, there's several of them that have these huge deposits in really attractive jurisdictions, and they still haven't really moved much.
Would you kind of take the same philosophy then with those kind of companies that have the potential of attracting a major or a strategic partner, or maybe they already have a partner or partners? Would you take that same philosophy that you had with the gold and silver stocks for people that are thinking about dipping their toe into the copper stocks while they're depressed? You know, would you look at the developers that would be attractive takeover candidate?
Yes, and I am doing that. I have one-on-one meeting scheduled with a couple next week that I really like. I wouldn't get into them just yet, but I'm basically putting my ducks in a row to possibly get into one or two copper developers before the end of the year. I'm looking forward to the Beaver Creek conference here in September, and I'll be speaking to a lot more one-on-one.
All right, Dave, we'll wrap it up here. Look, there's opportunities out there, especially in this environment where if you do agree that gold price could be moving up to $3,000, silver, who knows where that could go, but A lot of people are saying it could go to $50. It might not go this month, but hey, there's even been some of the bulls out there saying it could go this month. These stocks you think would eventually play some more catch up here. It all starts with the higher, the larger cap stocks, and they have started to move, especially in copper. Those have done very well, but I know a lot of us still just sitting there looking at some of these other stocks, the smaller ones. And as you even said, some of these optionality plays, they could really get moving as long as these metal prices keep going in the direction that they have been. Dave, thank you so much for your time on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Please be sure to go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. Dave, everyone listening, I hope you all have a great rest of your week.